Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, laid up right now, injured, but still playing through it and joining us on the podcast. How's it going?
I am weak and feeble, Zach, so the people know, because it's very important for them. I was playing a little traditional Thanksgiving football, and I don't know how people do that for real, in the real game of football. I was playing flag football, and I tore a serratus muscle, I believe it's called. I don't know my Latin all that well, and I can barely move.
Now, how did you tear this muscle?
I made a very nice catch. I did that much. It was one of those where I didn't really need to dive. You know how during the baseball season, 5 out of those top 10 highlights are just dudes falling down to dramatize their catch when they really didn't need to do that out there in center field? That's what they do in football, but the problem is that there are other people trying to catch the ball in football. So you might do that to dramatize your catch, but suddenly you're falling and somebody is falling on you, which is what happened to me.
Yeah, it reminds me of this highlight I remember seeing on SportsCenter in like 1990, well, it would have been 94, it was, I think, spring training for the White Sox, and Michael Jordan was trying out, so it was a big deal. And he caught a ball and then dove after he caught it. And I just remember Ozzie Guillen and Joey Cora making fun of him for diving after the catch in the highlight. It was clearly a big moment in my life because I remember it almost 20 years later.
Nobody calls them out on that BS. I like that they did that back then because you don't see it. They just go, "Oh, what an incredible catch!" And it's clear a lot of the time. Nah, he could have just caught that.
Right. It would be weird if guys like hit three pointers and then dove on the ground to like well, dramatize it.
It kind of is a little like flopping. This is flopping not for a call but for glory, which when you think about it, is even more despicable. You
it
know?
Is because there's
for your team.
Yeah, there's no gain in terms of strategy. It's only gain in terms of your own glory.
Yeah, it's just getting on that top 10. But hey, baseball's a selfish sport. It's not really a team sport. It's a collection of guys marching up to the plate. And oh wait, I just remembered that I'm talking to the guy who likes to cut me down to size whenever I talk baseball and actually start quizzing me on who the players are. So I'm going to stop right now.
It took you. I mean, no kidding. It took you hours to name 20 players that weren't Bay Area players.
It's not my sport.
And yet you talk with such conviction when you speak of it.
Hey, all I know is I was a big Ken Griffey Jr. fan when I grew up, and I really liked that video game.
Oh, it was a great video game.
It's a great theme song. Loved it.
No, that's fantastic. Speaking of a collection of guys, we had a collection of 24 pretty good players on two teams last night with the Indiana Pacers and the Portland Trailblazers. Probably the game of the night, that San Antonio Atlanta game was good, and the Pelicans Bulls game was hilariously close. But the Blazers Pacers game was just phenomenal. I mean, the Blazers have been incredible at home so far this season. The Pacers have been incredible everywhere, and we saw a Portland team kind of make their mark a little bit early in the season, as much as you can. And I know that you're not buying into this Portland team. I like them quite a bit because they shoot a lot of threes at a high clip, and their offense is just fantastic. I think that you do have a problem with the idea that this win shows they're for real.
Yeah, I don't. That's way too much prisoner of the moment for me, where some win is a statement win or a statement. Come on, this is early December. Let's settle down a bit. I liked it as a reflection of how smart their coach is. That's what I liked about this win, where Stotts looked at that impossible Indiana defense, and he tried an interesting strategy. He said, okay, mid-range jumpers, those tend not to be the good shot to get, those long two-pointers. But against Indiana, that's the shot that they're seeding. That's the one they're giving you. So you just have to stop them enough on defense and confidently shoot those mid-range jumpers and hit them. And that's the strategy they started out with. I'm not sure how much of it held up towards the end of the game. It seemed as though they got more open looks from three as it went on. They took those. But that, to me, reflected a coach who's smart and who's going for a market inefficiency. And I like that a whole lot. That was a good sign.
Well, that's kind of the beauty of their offense, is they do just wear you down. I mean, they're third in offensive efficiency right now throughout the season, after 18 games. And they really do just, they kind of punish you. They move the ball, they get inside, and then I mean, the way Damian Lillard attacks, the way that that Mo Williams attacks off the bench, they just do a phenomenal job of getting inside and making you make a defensive decision. And the ball movement just kind of makes that decision the wrong one, you know, often. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I believe that they're for real. Do I believe they're the best team in the West? No, I would still put San Antonio and Oklahoma City above them. I'd put the Clippers above them. But after that, like, because of the Warriors' injuries and because the Rockets are still kind of trying to figure their identity out, I love this Portland core. Wes Matthews is playing out of his mind. I love the bench that they've put behind these guys. And I don't know, they look like a legitimate top four team in the West right now to me.
Well, the problem is when we say for real, we're not really defining what we're talking about. I think they're definitely a playoff team. They look like a playoff team. And also, with their three-point shooting, I believe they could win almost any series just because you can get hot, as it were. But it would be crazy if they won the championship. Is that what we're talking about when we say a title contender, a championship contender? I mean, come on. That's probably not happening. They don't have the defensive talent to do that, it would seem.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say that they're a title contender by any means, but I think you can be. I think when you say for real, like, I think that it's, can this team get to the second round of the playoffs? Like, to me, that's a for real team.
Yeah, they could do that.
That doesn't make you a title contender, but there aren't a lot of matchups out there in the West right now that I think they would end up getting where I would pick against them, because they're not going to get San Antonio in the first round. They're not going to get the Thunder in the first round. You know, they're going to get one of those teams that we're kind of discussing, like, are they with this team or not? Like, I think they could beat Houston. I think they could beat the Warriors. Maybe they could even beat the Clippers. Anybody below them from that point, I think I would definitely pick them to beat.
I'm interested in this idea of which team does a Western Conference team least want to play. I'm guessing for the Rockets, I'm guessing for the Spurs, it would be the Rockets. I don't know which one the Rockets would least want to play. I'd have to think about that. And I'm guessing for maybe for the Thunder, it would be the Warriors. I'm not sure, but it's going to be fascinating when those matchups happen. I just want to fast forward to the playoffs. I mean, I don't want to rewind too much, but that Houston Spurs game over the weekend was just utterly fantastic, because the Spurs have this strategy, not unlike the Pacers, of trying to give up, trying to give up mid-range shots. But the way that they do it is this combination of having Duncan sink back and having Tiago Splitter and Duncan really protect the interior. But the Rockets, with their four-out strategy and with the newly competent Terrence Jones, they force Tiago off the floor, and that takes the Spurs from being this elite defensive team to kind of not that. So that one is really interesting to me, and I really want that to happen, maybe more than any other series.
Terrence Jones is oddly confident. I'm still not a Terrence Jones guy by any means, but he is very competent right now. And shooting, he doesn't take a lot of threes, but he is a threat. He's taken almost 1.5 a game. He's hitting 43%. I don't think there's any chance that holds up throughout the season, but it's hard to find fault with the way he's performing in that role, I would say.
The one game I missed last night was Houston-Utah, where Utah surprisingly won. When I see Jones played 18 minutes, I'm just assuming he got ejected. Am I being unfair given his personality?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say he got ejected.
He got dejected?
He got dejected. He wasn't good. Yeah. I think maybe you should let him play through that, but Kevin McHale seems very intent on, hey, Omri Caspi is playing well for us. We should ride this as long as we can.
I like looking at the box score when you didn't see the game and trying to deconstruct what happened. I look at James Harden scoring 37 points on 22 shots with a minus 12, and I'm thinking, his defense probably wasn't the best.
Oh, there were some clips you can see. I think John Schumann of NBA.com was tweeting them out this morning. But there's just Gordon Hayward just walking by James Harden with the basketball. Not even really driving, just walking casually to the hoop. And James Harden just at a certain point, like, I think Hayward gets to the free throw line area, and Harden just says, you know what, you got me, go ahead. And then I think he's just waiting for Dwight Howard to be there to reject the shot. And Hayward is just good enough to where he gets good shots in the lane at this point. And then Harden, there was one where Harden does like he does the hand clap of like, ah, oh, I can't believe that happened. And it's like, you had zero resistance. I know that move, James. I perfected that move, that pretending you care that your man just scored on you. Except I do it in pickup basketball. You're doing it in NBA games right now. I honestly don't think he cares that he's given up points.
Yeah, James Harden at altitude, that's a dangerous combination when it comes to the defense. There's going to be some conserving of energy unless it's maybe a nationally televised game and we're all paying attention. What I'm wondering with him, and I don't want to harp on this particular game because it's the one I didn't see last night, how bad does it have to be to where we'll go he shouldn't be in the All-Star game? Despite all this good offensive stuff he does.
No, he's way... I mean, well, it's weird you've become so pro All-Star game.
I like it. I think it's fun. I think trying to figure out who should be on it, who should be in it, I think it's all good fun.
But James Harden, if we're talking about fun, James Harden should definitely be in it then.
Should he? See, here's what's fascinating is that he's a cool player. He's got a cool aura with a style that's not really that fun to watch.
Oh, I disagree.
He has the Euro step. I like that.
He has a Euro step. He's got a fantastic handle, really sick low handle. His passing's really good. And I think in a game like that, just how up-tempo it is, I think he's a lot of fun.
But he's also Mr. Flop. He's also...
This is the problem, is you're anti-flopping now.
No, I'm not anti-flopping, but I think aesthetically I'm anti-flopping. Any player I root for, I want that player to flop because that's smart, and he gets to the free throw line, and that helps the team.
Last year, he plays 25 minutes and 50 seconds in the All-Star game, goes 15-6-3, the 3 being assists, 6 being rebounds. He didn't get to the free throw line once, so I don't agree with your flopping. He took 8 threes,
that's 6 a very good shooting. Point. I'm going to have to stand down. There's no flopping in the All-Star game, so it shouldn't be a consideration.
Right.
I'm with it. Okay.
Yeah, he changes his style. He'll adjust. And he's already not playing defense, so you know that's going to be fun both ways.
He's not going to adjust. He's only adjusting for offense. He's the only player only adjusting for offense
right
there.
Right, exactly.
Everyone else is toning down the defense. Okay, Harden, you're in.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
You are in the All-Star game.
I want to go back to the Blazers because
yes,
I just don't know. I have had a problem all season long with people being mad that they're undefeated against bad teams, against teams that are below 500. Like this is
That's
some kind
what
of
should be doing.
Like this, yeah, exactly. Like this is some kind of bad mark on their report card. It's like, okay, you want teams that are kind of good, which we thought they would be going into the season. Like, oh, this team could make the playoffs for sure. Like that seemed to be the consensus. And you want those teams to learn how to just beat the teams they're supposed to beat, and that's what they've done. And they're good against the good teams. They're like 6-3 against teams that are above 500 or better. So I just don't understand the reservation to say that this team's really good. Because I think you look at the way Damian Lillard's playing, I think you look at the way LaMarcus Aldridge is playing. And really, the whole time, I mean, Thomas Robinson's been great for them off the bench. You know, Mo Williams, Darrell Wright have been really good, I feel like, in their roles. And they're still waiting to get CJ McCollum back. Like, this is a legit, like, good team that is fun for everybody to watch.
Yeah, well, part of it is what we talked about earlier, where we don't know what we're defining when we say that they're for real or they're legit or they've thrown their hat in the ring. That promotes a lot of debate and disagreement because that can be interpreted any way. And then you're going, well, they're not going to win a championship. What are people talking about? And I think that's what it is. But you can't really poke holes in their case as a playoff contender. I mean, that seems fairly clear that they're that. So I think it just has to do with how vague this whole discussion is. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Eventually, they should hit some bumps in the road. They'll get an injury or two, and some of these shots won't fall. Wesley Johnson will start missing some shots. That should happen.
You mean Wes Matthews?
Wes Matthews. Wesley Johnson does miss shots. That's what he does.
No. He's
really good at that.
He's good. He's good now. That's what.
Oh yeah, I forgot. He's Lakered up.
Yeah,
you know,
he Lakered up.
that's really improved. But yeah, Wes Matthews should start missing shots. He's been incendiary this season.
Ooh, I love that word, incendiary.
Oh, it's a great
it reminds
word.
Me of Almost Famous.
I you know, I'm not the biggest Almost Famous fan, I gotta say.
Of course you're not. Jesus.
I'm white. I'm a very white guy, but Almost Famous is too white for me.
Really? I didn't think that was possible.
It's an insanely white look at music. It's just almost a little too pasty for my likes.
Wow. I just think it's even the Kate Hudson parts are okay for me. I'm very anti Kate Hudson.
She's so bad in that movie.
She's so bad in every movie. She's really awful.
She's not good. I liked the tiny dancer scene. That was good. I like that Marc Maron.
Yeah, but
has
she almost ruins that. She ruins that by she does that weird face off move where she rubs her hand down his face, or she does it pretends to flick water at his face, and she's like, "You are home." Like, it's just very, it's very creepy.
It is very creepy. Man, I'm finding reasons to like this movie after I insulted us.
It's a great movie! Well, it's not great, but it's really good. It's very entertaining. It's very rewatchable.
It's just the kind of movie where the type of person I don't like, or the type of person I don't relate to at all, somebody a little bit Gen X or older, is going to... I was about to use a bad euphemism on this podcast.
Ooh.
There's going to be a little bit of onanism. I can't pronounce anything.
What are you talking about?
Nobody knows. I'm injured, Zach. That's what's happening
Here is a legitimate problem with that movie. I don't know what Billy Crudup looks like in real life. I feel like he looks so different in every movie that I just assume he's constantly getting plastic surgery. You could show me a lineup of like four Asian guys and Billy Crudup. I wouldn't be able to pick out who's who. I have no idea what he looks like.
And Jason Lee looks like how he looks.
Yeah, Jason Lee looks exactly how he looks in everything.
It's very easy to pick out. Jimmy Fallon looks a little disguised. That's what's fun about those 70s movies, or movies set in that era. People are a little bit disguised. As to whether or not the Blazers are in disguise right now, hard to say, but I don't think we should act as though they are their record right now. They're a little bit worse, if we're being rational,
I think they can be their record and still not be a title contender. I think they're very much their record.
Here's the question that I have. They have all these three-point shooters. Is it possible that they will have their water cut off when they get into a playoff series because they don't really spread the floor with those three-point shooters? They usually throw three shooters out there, not four. Their fourth shooter is a mid-range shooter in LaMarcus Aldridge.
I would say no, just because when they do go small with LaMarcus at the five, I think you can still spread the floor enough with him.
Mm-hmm.
And even when Robin Lopez is very good at moving around the basket.
That's true. And so
I think it's kind of like, he's not this good, obviously, but it's kind of that Tyson Chandler spacing effect in a way. I think they can get that to a certain degree. I don't know that they'll be necessarily talented enough to overcome consistent game planning throughout the playoffs, you know, because you know the scouts and coaching staff just lock in. And try to figure out ways to take away what you do well. I think that can last for an opponent, two opponents. You know, that's a little tough to do. But I don't know. I'm completely sold on this Blazers team, without meaning that they're a title contender. I have a hard time poking holes in what they do.
I what about defense?
What about defense?
It's a hole. That's a hole that they have.
It's a hole, kind of. I mean, they can't defend anybody on the perimeter, which is weird, because I find Wes Matthews to be a solid defender, and I think that, I mean...
He's no Wes Johnson, though. No, I'm just joking.
Batum's
he's always had the talent to be that, and people always wanted him to be that, but he's not really been that.
Yeah, he's a much better offensive player than he is a defensive player, even though he has a defensive reputation.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't think he's a bad defender. I just don't know that he's a game changer at this point. But maybe he can become that throughout the season, because that's kind of what they'll need him to be, right?
Oh, The other thing I loved that the Blazers did last night, and I'm a big Stotts fan, I'm just becoming a huge Stotts fan, is that he was yelling for them to push the pace and just run it up the floor, because how else are you going to evade the Hibbert? You have to run away from the Hibbert. That's what you have to
do.
And I thought that was really smart.
Yeah, that was really smart. It's weird. I've just never been impressed with Terry Stotts, mm-hmm. but maybe he just never had the personnel to really make his system work, and now he clearly does. Yeah. I think maybe the biggest concern for me with them is actually Lillard, in the fact that he's not very good scoring inside the arc.
True.
Like, in terms of efficiency. I mean, he's an under 40% two-point shooter. Which
And he also takes some heat-checky shots. He also takes some crazy three-pointers.
Yeah, and he's a good three-point shooter, but I am a little worried about teams running him off the three-point line and finding a way to stop him inside the arc. I guess if I – and then the Mo Williams-Lillard backcourt, if that's not clicking offensively in a playoff series, like they're just going to get destroyed defensively. But other than that, I don't know. I'm just I love this team right now.
Is Paul George going to keep shooting like Dirk Nowitzki from mid-range? Is that just – something that happens now?
It kind of is. He's just so good at taking what the defense is willing to give him and converting that right now.
I am so shocked by it. I keep expecting it to end. Right now, what's funny is that he's got everything but the layup. He's shooting 43% on layups.
Oh, you love your layup stats.
I do. And he's shooting, I believe, over 50% from mid-range. That is odd.
It is odd. I wonder if it's part of it is because he doesn't really draw foul or draw free throws. Like he does like 5 a game, which, considering his scoring outburst of almost 25 a game, it seems odd that it's so low. So I wonder if he is too concerned with avoiding contact around the rim to get a shot up. Maybe he has, in a similar way that we criticized Derrick Rose for a couple of years in that respect. And which is odd because his length is what is allowing him to be so good in the mid-range right now, because he can just rise up over whatever he needs to, and he's utilizing his length perfectly in that area.
He seems to rush fit. There was a play last night where he pump faked and he had a good layup and he just completely botched it, and there's almost some fear. It's almost as though playing with Roy Hibbert and seeing what Hibbert does to other teams has seeped into his psyche, and he's fearing some Hibbert on the other side, but there's no Hibbert on the other side.
He's worried that Hibbert's going to block his teammate's shot.
It probably happens in practice all the time.
It probably does. I could see that.
they need to do something about that. This is a problem. They have to fix it.
I found a moment in the game when Lance Stephenson fouled out and he slaps the table, and the look on the Blazers announcer's face, because it happened right in front of him, was just that was phenomenal. That was one of my favorite moments of the week.
I got a little scared right there. I was wondering, is this going to get, you know, palace brawly?
You got scared. Wow, you've got this Pacers bias when it comes to brawls.
No, I don't have a Pacers bias. It's just he hit that table really hard and it made a loud noise, and I was watching the Portland broadcast.
They were scared. I was watching Indiana because how do I say this? I just wanted to watch a better broadcast.
That's true. They are the better broadcast.
Yeah.
I was just too lazy to switch it over. I like the We Are Rip City or whatever those ads are that they run on the local broadcast.
Ooh, I do like those ads, yeah.
Yes, I enjoy those quite a bit, and I believe there is something about Jim Barnett hitting a shot in one of those, which I enjoy a whole lot. Warriors announcer Jim Barnett. So it was a little bit scary, and with Lance and with his history, there was that fear. There was that fear in the air. I'm glad it didn't become anything, and that would have been too bad, obviously, if it did. But I kind of wondered, you know, is this going to be a suspension? What are the rules? What is the etiquette of slapping the table of the rival announcers?
I don't think you can get in trouble for that. I mean, maybe they could give you a fine, but you'd have to hit that table pretty hard to get a suspension.
What happens if you grab their box scores and just sort of throw it up in the air? What about that?
Well, that would definitely be a technical foul.
But you've already been ejected.
You can still get a tech.
Yeah, that's
because you've been disqualified. You can go sit on the bench. You haven't been ejected.
What if you just clap in their faces? This is an unexplored territory for me because it's always the refs who are getting the brunt of this kind of thing, and it's only somebody a little bit crazy like DeMarcus Cousins who gets into a fracas, into some sort of.
Well, he flat out threatened Sean Elliott. That's what he did.
Yeah.
You talk to enough people, and you find out that he just flat out threatened Sean Elliott after that game.
Like Sean Elliott enough to stick up for him.
Right. Exactly.
is essentially what happened there. So I don't know the rules on that, but maybe as much as we're lauding the Blazers, had Stevenson stayed in the game, perhaps the Pacers win yet another game on the road.
Maybe. I don't know. He wasn't very good last night.
That's true. That's also
he hurt them a little bit. It's weird that they had to go to Orlando Johnson. I like Orlando. I think he can end up being a decent role player, but it's weird that they had to go to him in crunch time.
I love Orlando Johnson's name. He's one of those players. I was watching the game last night, and I was thinking about players who play that I could tell you the least about. And I thought Orlando Johnson is up there, as is Joel Freeland, where they're just kind of there.
Sure. Just kind of, yeah, I mean, I do know that Orlando Johnson was a second-round pick out of Santa Barbara, and that I really, like, leading up to the draft – a couple years ago, I thought he was a second round sleeper because his scoring numbers were so good. Not taking into account that he played at Santa Barbara, and that's probably why they were so good. And I also there was a player, I can't remember where he came out of, this player Trey Johnson, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that, who I thought was going to be a second round sleeper, and then I don't think he got drafted at all, and then I think he kind of toiled in the D League for a little bit, and I don't know that he's playing anymore. But then I started having like this Johnson maybe stigma that I thought Trey Johnson was going to, or Orlando Johnson was going to be another Trey Johnson for me. So I'm happy to see he's stuck around at least a couple of years.
Does the stigma apply to Trey's though? I mean, Trey Burke is kind of coming along.
I'm a huge Trey Burke fan.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure. No. That's an exciting little story out there in depressing old Utah.
They're like three out of their last four they've won. They're kind of getting competitive. Are you there?
No, you dropped off. You said they're like, and I think there was a three, and I something about Billy Crudup probably followed.
they're three out of their last four they've won.
They're three out of four Crudups.
Yeah, they're three out of four Crudups. I don't know. They're kind of becoming what I would hope they would be. Like before the season started, I was like, this team is only going to win like 28 games, but they're going to be really hard to deal with on a nightly basis. And then through the first like 15 games, they were very easy to deal with on a nightly basis. But they're kind of coming around a little bit. I'm happy for them.
I just like when you sound like an old rabbi. Like, three out of four games they've won. Eight knishes I ate. I like that way of describing who did what.
Yeah,
that's fun. How did you feel about that Pelicans Bulls death march?
Oh God, I just wanted it to end because it wasn't good basketball. The only good parts were when Ryan Anderson was shooting. I really enjoyed that part of the game.
Sweet. I liked when Deng had it cooking, and this was Deng's moment, but he looked morose. He looked like he was going to spell out "help me" on the half court with some shoes and stuff, and that, you know, Thibs is essentially keeping me hostage. He did not look happy at all. My God, he looked bummed out. It was sad. It was very sad.
I think, speaking of Trey's, I think Trey Kirby had a great tweet at one point where he said, "Luol Deng's been awesome tonight, but every turnover has been a complete disaster."
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great way of summing up how he played.
He was quasi-functional. The Ryan Anderson show, as you mentioned, was a great show to behold. I'm very sad that we don't get to see him and AD working together.
Oh, yeah, your boy. How do you feel that you – I think – here's the problem. Here's, I think, what happened.
Yeah.
You were so happy that you were correct about the Derrick Rose injury happening in the season. No, hear me out. Hear me out. Don't interrupt me. Interrupt me, you must okay. not. You were so happy that you called that Derrick Rose was going to have a big injury this year that I think the karma negatively spun towards your favorite player in the league, Anthony Davis.
This is crazy, Zach. I don't take joy in anything awful happening to a player. Look,
if your G chats were not off the record, I would very much disagree with you right now.
Look, I think we were more joking about that, about how we often like our intellectual vanity more than we like anybody else, and we like being correct.
I would rather be correct than be a better fan.
But in this case, you just know you're not going to get credit for something awful. You can't bask in it. You can't revel in that. You can't go, I predicted this thing that bums everybody out. That's no good. You can't wave that flag. What you can do is, if you said that Portland was going to be really good before the season began, yeah, you can wave that flag. It's a great flag to wave. This is a depressing flag, and everyone calls you a jerk for waving it. So, no, it did not warm the cockles of my heart to see that happen to Derek Rose. I still believe it's very sad. But as to your, supposition that something mystical happened where my Derek Rose prediction influenced how the hand, the bones of Anthony Davis' hands moved around and all that sort of, yeah, that's plausible. I think that's kind of what happened.
Speaking of vanity in Portland, I predicted them as a 7th seed before the season started. And, as of right now, they're going to be higher than that. But I wonder if anybody picked them for higher than 7th, because if that's
probably not,
because if they didn't, then I'm feeling very good about myself in this whole Portland scene.
Yeah, that's what's funny,
and
about
that's
it.
What's you important, right?
You get criticized by one of their fans who's peacocking right now about how you only wanted them to be a 7th seed, even though that's better than what everybody else.
Yeah, and I can just say, hey, nobody had them higher than me.
Yeah, and they go, no, because it's what we call creeping determinism, whereby. Whatever happened, people convinced themselves that they knew it was going to happen, even if they totally didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. Okay, so Indiana has been kind of the talk of the season in terms of, like, elite teams. But this Miami Heat team's won 10 in a row. They're 14-3. They're kind of still the best team in the league, right? Although you did – I think you tweeted last night that something about how it's hard to imagine anybody beating this Pacers team.
People got so weird about that. All these Heat fans started yelling at me about it, and I wasn't saying that I would pick them to beat the Heat. I just said right now, in December, it's just hard to imagine a team beating them 4 out of 7 times. And hard to imagine still might mean that, hey, if I look at this other team, yeah, I think they could do it. It's just you start having these ridiculous arguments about what is or is not difficult to imagine. We're having arguments about imagination. About how much imagination I'm using.
Right.
It might have a dearth of it. I'm too much of a literalist. Look, I'm not sure. It has to play out. I have to see if Greg Oden is healthy at all. That would be a factor. If he's
I don't think that matters.
You don't think it matters, eh?
No.
Is he's just that feeble and you're not counting on it, so it's just not really
don't you dare patronize my love for Greg Oden, first of all.
Well, I know. You've got this odd love and it's weird because
he was a really good player.
Yeah, but you just don't blame him for anything that happened. That's the thing. That's
how is it his fault? Greg, you should never have jumped.
I'm just saying, oh god, this sounds so wrong. This is very
this is Derrick Rose politics. All over again.
It's very anti-basketball Twitter politics, but we do this thing where we love these athletes so much and we celebrate them and we empathize with them that we're rarely sort of critical. And it's, look, it's sad if you have a drinking problem, but that probably contributes to you not being able to be healthy. It does have a corrosive impact on your muscles and rehab, and it's – I'm not saying – maybe had he done everything properly, this would have happened regardless. I'm just saying that he might have not had the best approach early in his career also. That's all I'm saying.
Is that his fault or is it the trainer's fault?
It's with anything calamitous, it's multifactorial and it's probably a few factors.
Oh, you and your $10 words.
That's how I hide. That's how I hide when I'm nervous. Like James Harden hiding his defense behind that bushy beard. That's
the bushy beard. The bushy beard and the faux anger clap. Oh, I just can't believe he's using the anger clap.
That's exactly what happened.
I played last night and I used the faux anger clap constantly. But I personally didn't care that my man scored on me ever.
Sociopath moves.
Because I was on fire, so it didn't matter. I was making it up 2 for 1 each time.
Oh, why would you lie? Why would you lie to your teammates? Well, okay, so strategically with the Heat, the Oden thing might not matter.
Here's why I like it, though. Here's why I like this team right now. Dwayne Wade is at the second lowest usage rate of his career. And that's I think it helps him a lot. The fact that he doesn't have to do all that much. I mean, he's still turning the ball over a lot, but I just think like the fact that they're not relying on him at all builds up so much for the effectiveness of how that team operates, and then allows him to kind of unleash in big spots in the playoffs. And I just think like the way they're surging even this early, because they're not relying on everyone, and LeBron is just so absurdly good at this point. Like, it's just, they're still the best team in the league, right?
Gun to my head, I'd say yeah.
Why are you putting the gun to your head? That's so unnecessary. It's so dramatic. It's
the only way I can make decisions, Zach. I'm a wild man.
It's so dramatic.
I wake up and I shave my face with a sword. No shaving cream. And then when I need to make a decision, I don't just mull it. I put a gun to my head. That's how I do it.
Your fiance will say, like, what do you want on the pizza I'm ordering? And you're just going to say, I don't know. And then you're going to put a gun to your head and be like, olives and pineapple.
That's how we do it in Oaktown.
Don't call it that.
Don't call it that. That's how we do it in the O. Well, here's what I like about them. What I like about them is that Chris Bosh is becoming a legit three-point threat after working on it for two seasons. And we saw that most prominently when he closed out the Bobcats a couple days ago. But that is very interesting because then you're dragging Roy Hibbert out there, theoretically. As long as you're not playing Haslam alongside Bosh and you're playing LeBron at the four, then I'm not sure if that's the same defensive Pacers team or that's the team they want to be if they have to drag Hibbert all the way out there. And so perhaps that gives them the edge, Oden or no Oden.
You know, I don't mind. I've been very happy with Udonis Haslam's play this year. They're using him very sporadically, but last year he was not good. Maybe the last 2 years he wasn't good. I think he's good this year, especially in his role.
Yeah. This is not a diss to Haslam. He's a very scary person, and I wouldn't want to insult him. It's just that Indiana eats conventional offense for dinner.
They really
and you need to do something a little bit tricky, if it's what Stotts did last night by pushing the pace and trying mid range jumpers, that's one way to do it. For the Heat, it might be having their center shoot threes, and so that wrinkle could help the Heat in this. I think we're all thinking, injuries aside, if inevitable showdown.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, this is your one and two for the entire season, and then nobody's beating these two teams in the playoffs.
Well, unless it's somebody from the West, but
to lead up to that point, like this is absolutely going to be the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes, something crazy, something shocking would have to happen for it not to be, and that's an impact. I want to transition a little bit though, because we were talking about Oden before, and it seems like you have some sort of big man bias where you really cape up for them.
Oh my God.
I heard you taking some shots at me, a shot or two about this Drummond free throw thing. What's the deal?
No,
Zach?
It wasn't a shot at you. I mean, you're included in the group I was taking a shot at, but it wasn't specifically you. It's not all about you.
Don't dare parse this.
You definitely were a target, but not the target. I really am just, the more I've thought about it, people are so obsessed that shooting free throws underhanded would fix all of his problems. And for a guy who has horrible touch on these jumpers and on this shooting motion,
it would have fixed Greg Oden's drinking problem if Andre Drummond had only done underhand free throws, it would have fixed Oden's drinking problem from a few years ago.
But you know what? Maybe I'll DM Andre about this because he does follow me. I don't know if he follows you or if he still has you blocked, but I know it bothers you that Andre follows me on Twitter.
I actually didn't know that. That's an interesting brag.
No, I bragged about that when it happened. I sent it to you.
I forgot about it. Blocked it out.
Much like he blocked your Twitter feed from him.
Much like he blocked my Twitter feed. And so maybe I'm emotionally raw over it. No, I didn't have a problem with him doing that. That's fine. I get that.
Yeah.
It's a sensitive topic for him personally, and he feels like he's having the way he goes about things being questioned. But you, sir, you sticking up for his opinion, that is what I have a problem with.
You have a problem with me agreeing with him?
Yes, exactly. I don't have a problem with his position. I have a problem with you agreeing with him, because he could just say, hey, you know, I tried it, and I'm not any better doing the underhand free throws, and then everybody would stop having an opinion.
No, that is not how the internet works at all.
That's how it works.
No,
that's, how it
that's not how the internet works at all. It would be, why aren't you trying it in a game? That's immediately where it would go to.
Why? That's where we'd go to, you think?
Well, come on! This is the internet we're talking about. That's absolutely where it would go to. I think
this is how you would handle it. This is how you would handle it if you knew that shooting underhand was worse than what you were trying. You would just not include that, as opposed to telling everybody relax because you're never trying underhand.
Maybe it's not worse. Maybe it's just the same amount of ineffective. And if that's the case, I don't understand why he has to, you know, suck up to you and all of these underhand free throw shooter fans.
You're making this about sucking up to people. All it is giving people a logical rationale for why you're failing at what you're failing at. And look, I believe this is a straw man. The idea that everybody believes that this would automatically fix what ails him and be better. Nobody knows. It's just a matter of you're the worst at this. It's hard to be any worse than what you're doing. And if he is equally bad at this, then, I mean, that's kind of staggering to be that bad at both modalities of free throw shooting. And so that's why people are wondering. It's why not try option B if option A is so awful.
But here's the thing. He doesn't go to the free throw line.
Yeah, he's Biedrenzine.
Well, I mean, he's managing to be a really good force out there. I mean, a really good force. He's had a fantastic season. No, he's shooting 65%.
Offensively, he's being, and I love watching him. He was, oh man, in that Sixers game, he was just a beast. Offensively, he's being a force. Defensively, it seems like on the other end, he's trying to avoid getting fouls, and he stopped playing defense.
Which I disagree with that.
I mean, like, what are the block numbers? I'm gonna look this up. I like this drum.
Don't go to the block numbers. You know that doesn't mean defense.
Okay, but it's well. How have the Pistons been playing defense this year, Zach? I mean, like, I think that.
We're not going to put any blame on your boy Josh Smith, who's this all-world defender who's actually not defending anymore.
Well, I think that. Okay, so Drummond is blocking 1.2 shots per game at 33 minutes per game. I'm sorry, with his skill set and given what he did last year, I believe that would indicate, and my eyes would indicate, that he's not challenging a lot of layups and he's not challenging a lot of shots.
Here's what we need, though. We need, and we'll never get it, but we need a shots altered stat. Because Tyson Chandler was never a big shot blocker. And I'm not saying he's Tyson Chandler on defense, but Chandler's never been a shot blocker, and yet he's had some very good defensive impacts.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think that it's quite plausible for somebody to be good at defense while blocking under two shots a game. I just don't believe that Drummond is that guy based on watching him this year.
The biggest problem with this team is they don't play Gigi Datome enough.
Oh, obviously. I love that guy's look. He could fit in. He would fit in perfectly in Almost Famous.
He actually would. I was just thinking that. He would really, like, if there was like an Italian cover band of Stillwater, he would be the lead singer.
He would definitely be the lead singer of that band. Yeah, I want more of him. And I don't know what I want more of. Do I want more Jerebko? I don't know if I want more Jerebko.
No, I think we're done with Jerebko. I really think we're done with him. He had like a good couple of months, and he's really Omri Caspi'd his way out. The only thing that can save him is playing
anti-Werner bias right there.
Oh, come on. The entire Timberwolves team is four.
That's true. That's very true. But there is that thing that happens where somebody comes from overseas and nobody knew about them before, so they get everyone excited because it's as though they fell out of the sky, and then they get scouted up and maybe get an injury or two and fizzle out. And yes, that is the same pattern from Caspi that we're seeing with Jerebko.
Although he has bounced back, so if Jerebko can find his way to the Rockets, I think we could see a resurgence.
Did he have the Kobe injury, Jerebko? Or am I imagining that?
I have no idea.
I love how Kobe's so famous that the Achilles injury, it's going to be like with Lou Gehrig's disease. It's just going to be called the Kobe.
It should be the Michael Crabtree injury. He had it first. Come on, man. He had it first.
Yeah, but people don't think about injuries in football. They just assume everyone's injured. Injuries don't take on they don't take on the grandeur in football that they do in the NBA. injuries are a big deal. Everyone's half injured in the NFL, so it's just not that big a deal.
Yeah, he strained his Achilles in 2010.
What is this difference between strained and tore?
Well, I think tearing means you've torn the muscle.
Iguodala has some sort of... Nobody knows. Nobody trusts the Warriors about injuries. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going on there. I mean, what I fear with the Warriors is you mentioned that they hired a Wolves trainer to their staff. Why would you do that?
They did. I don't know what... I think he's just a strength and conditioning guy.
He could be great. I want to say, get that out of the way, that he could be great at what he does. It's just one of those, on the face of it, that you probably wouldn't look at the 2012-2013 Wolves and say, we need one of their guys from that side.
Right. Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think that the Iguodala injury is so weird because, all right, he felt a pop, and then they said there's no tear, right?
They said it was a crackle.
It wasn't a snap, it wasn't a pop, it was a crackle, which is okay, yes, medically. And then it was, oh, he's not going to need surgery. Well, when's he going to be back? Oh, we have no idea.
Yeah, nobody knows.
and all it is like they're just calling it a strained hamstring, right?
Yeah, and Barnes had foot inflammation earlier. And,
right.
And Tony Douglas doesn't have a stress fracture. He has a stress reaction.
Yeah, I don't like the stress reaction stuff.
His bone is reacting weirdly.
Yeah, his bone is reacting as if it's about to break.
His bone is just very anxious. It's under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, there've been problems at home lately with the bone.
It needs to go to Hawaii, maybe have a few Mai Tais with Don Nelson.
It's not getting along with the metatarsals at all.
Yeah, it just needs to let its hair down. It needs to look like Gigi on the Pistons. I mean, these just don't sound like medical terms, or at least medical terms the way I've come to know them.
I'm really waiting for for Steph Curry to like hurt his ankle or his knee or something. Not something serious, but then just be like, he's out with an owie.
His boo-boo is acting up. Curry. Is anyone talking about Curry? How do people feel about his play? I know that people hate it when this detours into Warriors.
Oh, I think they expect it with you.
They do? They're braced for it?
Yeah,
well,
I think so.
It's happening towards the end of the podcast. How do people feel about him? Because he had so much hype going into the season. I'm in this bubble. I'm in this provincial Bay Area bubble, so I don't know how the outside views him.
It feels like he's been great, right?
I think so. I've been very happy with the results.
And you've been banging this drum a little bit on Twitter, is that he started out shooting the ball slowly last year.
Mm-hmm. And well, every year, November, he has shot 5% worse from three than in the other months, which might be random, but I think he's just one of those guys, and there are a few of these players, where they start off slowly and they gain steam over the course of the year.
This is how crazy good he is that he's shooting 44.3% from three. And if this held, this would be the third highest of his 5-year career.
Yeah,
that's just insane.
He's missing some shots that he usually makes, and I go, oh, is there something wrong with him? Is it his ankle? And then I remember, oh yeah, last season, the beginning of last season, and the season before that season, I was doing the same thing, and it's just kind of, he works out the kinks as the year goes along, and it also seems like he takes more 3-pointers as the year goes along. I'm not sure why he operates that way, but that's how it goes. What I've really enjoyed from him is that teams are defending him differently. They're throwing two guys out at him on pick and roll, and that's really upped his assist numbers, and he's looking a little more Steve Nash-like. He's sometimes even driving to the hole, and because he can't make a layup that well, instead of trying to layup, he just curls around the baseline like Steve Nash did and finds people.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the hell out of that. That's a lot of fun.
He's on pace to... He's on pace to hit 266 threes. He set the record last year with 272. So he's really not... I mean, he's taking the same amount of threes per game. He's really not that far off on his shooting. And if he's going to get better as the season goes on, I mean, we could be looking at 280.
I think basically if he stays healthy, which is the biggest if in the world, he'll break it. That's my prediction.
Yeah, because he's already... I mean, he's just barely off of last year's pace in terms of accuracy.
Klay's on pace to break it, but I don't think he'll break it because Curry shoots more as the season goes along, and if Curry gets hurt, then that cuts Clay's water off. That's the second time I've used that stupid metaphor. But then there's nobody to get Clay the ball, so Clay won't have the means to break it.
Right, that's true.
Well,
Tony Douglas might be able to if he can get that reaction to calm down. If he can get his leg to calm down.
Calm down that reaction. I think we all know that Tony Douglas isn't necessarily your prototypical point guard. That he's a very good defensive player.
Not per usual.
Spot up three.
Yeah, not per usual. He's definitely not.
And I don't. Nedovic is has the court vision of. Man, a horse with the blinders. That's
of
so
J.J. Brea. He's got the court vision of J.J. Brea, but Brea's excuse is he can't see over anybody.
Yeah, well, he just has sort of this tunnel vision towards the rim, and there have been a few times where somebody's been open, and Nedovic, I guess, didn't think that they were that open. And we'll see how that plays out. The other thing with the Warriors, if I'm airing my grievances, is that play some small ball. Enough of the space.
I was just about to ask you about how you feel about David Lee's play so far this season.
I mean, I think that he's been better defensively. He's doing a good job staying attached to
his shot. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he's been he hasn't been good defensively, but for him, he's been much more engaged, I would say.
Yes, I think he's been doing better defensively. But let's not make this about Lee. I mean, I personally feel that some of Lee's minutes should be cut into with some of the small ball funny business, and I've been vocal on that. But you don't even need to make it about him. Just give Spates his minutes to Draymond Green right now. That's something that could be done to work in some of those four 3-point shooters around Bogut. It's just a little bit crazy to me. You can say that the Denver series was about matchups, but it's insane to have the strategy of Bogut plus four 3-point shooters win you a playoff series and then never try it again. That's crazy.
Especially now that Draymond Green can hit jumpers in the regular season.
Yes.
He's been really good.
Yeah. Oh, and his defense has been beastly. I've been loving the Draymond Green. This should let you know, Zach, that I don't hold a grudge. You know, Draymond came at me the way that that Drummond did, and I'm okay with it. I'm rooting on Draymond Green's success.
No, because you think these guys are gonna be. You don't believe that Greg Oden's getting back on the court, so you'll take pot shots at him and me all day.
What? No.
That's what it is.
No, I'm rooting for Oden too. Look, the thing is, I just feel as though it's odd that the Warriors must be so conventional, and I don't know what's driving that. I don't know if it's a lack of creativity or if they've looked into it and it doesn't work because such and such. But it is a frustration right now. I wish they would try it. I'm gonna hammer Mark Jackson on this today for the Raptors game while screaming out in pain and clutching my ribs.
Ooh, I think that's a good idea. You're gonna actually make it to the game despite your condition of a self-diagnosed muscle tear.
Well, yeah, Allie's telling me not to, but I'm stupid and I'm a man. And it's just like your spouse's good advice. If something limbic just clicks into order, you go, no, I will do the dumb thing. I played in a rec league game and hurt it worse despite her correctly telling me I shouldn't. I don't know. I can't stop myself.
You're a competitor unless –
I'm slapping the Blazers announcer score table of life. It's reactive. It's not planned. I can't hold it back.
Right. No, absolutely. That's exactly what's going on. Before we go.
Yes.
You mentioned the Spurs earlier because the Rockets beat them, but the Spurs and the Thunder the Spurs and the Thunder have just, I don't know. It's still hard for me to not think these two are kind of locked for a similar conference finals matchup.
Tête-à-tête.
Yeah.
I think the conference has gotten better around them, which decreases the odds that those will be the last two teams standing. But if you had to choose, if that metaphorical gun to the head happened again.
Oh, man, you're pulling on everybody right now.
This is another thing that Allie's telling me I shouldn't do, but that's how I make my decisions, damn it.
Here's an interesting thing I saw when I was writing up the Timberwolves' loss to the Thunder is that the Thunder, since trading James Harden, they're 43-7 at home in the regular season.
Ooh.
That's good.
Wow.
This team, I think people want them to be worse than they are because of the James Harden trade.
Well, and also the Seattle thing. It's almost like there should be some sort of karmic payback for what they've done.
Sure. Yeah.
And also, they do things that are just frustrating. They seem to squander a lot of value by trotting Kendrick Perkins out there. I don't know why.
My favorite thing, though, about Kendrick Perkins now is once a game, he will try to stir something. Once a game against the Wolves, he tries to stir something up, and then Pekovic steps in, and he gets real quiet real fast.
He is definitely schooled in the Kevin Garnett Academy of Fake Tough Guy.
Oh, how dare you?
You know it's true.
How dare you?
You know it's true.
Kevin Garnett went after Andrew Bogut once.
He also...
What? He wanted it to be a regular thing?
He also tends to pick on European guys who are shorter than he is. That's also the KG special.
Sure, like Antonio McDice.
we
all know about the top two players from Latvia have been Andris Biedrins and Antonio McDice.
I guess McDice could be from Ireland with that last name.
Okay, yeah, that's probably better. Should we talk before we go? Let's talk about this. Wait, you still have more to say?
I have more to say. You brought up this topic and then you ripped it away.
Well, because then you brought up Irish people, and now I can't stop but think about the Doors lady.
Okay, well that is another topic.
We could save that for another podcast, but
the lady from Mallrats who's losing her mind in those
advertisements. She's terrifying.
Yeah, well, I think the idea behind those advertisements, it's that you're drinking yourself into senescence, and you're looking at this post-apocalyptic world on the outside. And the
why is it post-apocalyptic?
Okay, it's because it's scary looking. It looks drab and terrible out there.
Looks like the United Kingdom. That's how the United Kingdom looks.
Well, you're just gonna have to apologize to those people later. That's what you said,
no,
buddy.
No, I've seen. First of all, my American Revolution blood runs deep. Thank you very much.
Well, I will not. What you're doing is you're looking towards your Scottish side and you're thinking everything looks like train spotting, but it doesn't. I'm saying it doesn't look good out there, and the idea is that if you drink, then you're going to perhaps be in this warm bosom of that room where I don't know if you play pool in that room.
The warm bosom of her cutting your throat just to for a party gag?
Angus, I don't understand the life that he's living, but
I can tell you the life he's living. He's living James Caan's life in misery.
That's true. But the idea, I think, is that you can retreat from the misery on the outside to the misery on the inside that's better and stylish and has fancy ladies who are a little intimidating, but
intimidating? She's going to cut your eyelids off.
It's weird that she wants you to fall asleep. What is she?
Right,
is she
exactly. That's terrifying.
It was a little darling at the end. Very unconvincing.
Yeah, Angus, drink until you fall asleep. I've got a surprise for you. You're going to wake up without a tongue. Have some more Doers. It's gonna disinfect what I'm about to do to you.
I'm a little bit nervous because I think that they advertised her in the ESPN games, but that was very... It was very funny.
So yeah, the Spurs are good.
The Spurs, yes. The Spurs are fascinating because everybody plays, I think, let me look at 5 minutes per game. Everybody on the Spurs plays 5 minutes per game. And it keeps them all fresh, and they're great at defense. And, you know, we get yelled at all the time. Why aren't you talking more about them? Why aren't you talking more about them? Part of it is that the continuity isn't a story. But hey, it's still great. That's not really a good story. The second part is that we really like stats, and we really like, you know, per game stats.
Yeah.
And they ruin all that. They muddle it. The average fan has no shot of knowing how good Thiago Splitter is. It's not just the defense, but it's also that he's not playing enough that his stats look impressive. So they can't really differentiate between him and all the Jason Smiths and the Pachulias of this world. So it's confusing. And so it's not only that they're in a small market and they don't talk to the media, but the very style they're playing doesn't enable them to become famous and to become a story.
I'm very happy that Patty Mills is a much more prominent player in their system right now, and that and that he's playing, that he's at least shooting well. I was a big Patty Mills fan at St. Mary's.
Yeah, I enjoyed Patty Mills quite a bit, and it's also fun to get the Australian contingent listening to the podcast. They're really big on the Patty Mills.
No, the Australians, the New Zealanders, they're big on the podcast right now.
Oh, I'm liking that Della Vadova is getting some run. He follows me on Twitter, Zach.
Wow.
I think that's the most prominent NBA player who follows me on Twitter.
No, David Lee doesn't?
David Lee, I think, used to, but then he got mad at me. Yeah. I think that's what happened.
Okay.
So, you know, that happens.
That's good to
but, know. And Bogut used to, but then he canceled his Twitter account for a while.
Yeah, he kind of went crazy on Twitter.
And then he got it back, and I think I was cut out of the fold, and I don't know. It doesn't matter. I actually, in all honesty, prefer when I'm not on the Twitter accounts of Warriors players, because then I can just talk freely about what's happening without thinking, oh, that's going to be seen.
Draymond Green's going to go after me.
Especially with a guy like Bogut or a guy like Green, where they are intimidating. I mean, nice
guys. They're not going to hit you.
No, but, you know, you never know. You never know with Bogut. He's a monster out there.
Wow. You just insulted the entire Australian contingent that you tried to log.
Insulted? I'm saying that they're rough and tumble. You know, this is a good thing.
You just called them criminals.
No, come on. Their country makes a lot of money, good social safety net, a lot of great things about it. Why am I backtracking? Why am I falling for this?
It's because I'm tricking you into this trap because of your harsh words about Gray Godin and a drinking problem he had a while ago.
Defensiveness trap that I have to elude in the future. Look, Australia's great, Bogut's great, Green's great. I don't expect any harm from either. That's all I have to say on the matter. That's it. I don't have anything else.
If you had to guess how old Patty Mills is, what would you say? Just how he looks.
25.
Oh, that's a good guess. I feel like he looks like he's in his 30s.
What is he?
He's 25.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm going to... What's my prize?
Well, the podcast is over.
Oh, okay.
It really is over, though. Ethan, we can follow you at Sherwood Strauss on Twitter. Your writings are all over the internet. I would say thank you, but I've actually... This was quite contentious, and I'm wishing we hadn't done it. No, I'll thank you anyway. Thank you, Ethan.
You started it. Thanks for having me on.